Thanks, Pete, for that kind introduction. First, I want to say that Al Rotz has set the stage, because I'm going to talk about the same five manure application techniques, but the odors associated with that. There's really a number of collaborators in ag and bioengineering and crop and soil sciences, as well as our esteemed session chair. The challenge, of course, is to manage manure and reduce tillage systems while simultaneously trying to capitalize on the nutrients, minimize water quality impacts, and avoid nuisance odor complaints. And fortunately, we are not working at cross purposes, because if we can effectively incorporate the manure into the root zone, at least we'll try to minimize probably surface water quality impacts, and as well as reduce odor complaints. The key challenge with odors is that you can't manage what you can't reliably measure, and it really is the key here. As well as the fact that odors and the whole issue is very complicated, and we tend to talk about four characteristics in odor assessment. It's usually the acronym FIDO is used: frequency, intensity, duration, and offensiveness. And of course, things like offensiveness have some subjectivity to them. So, but the key really is intensity. And I'm going to be talking about a threshold, because clearly, if you can't detect an odor, the other issues are irrelevant. The study objectives then are really twofold: to try to develop a reliable protocol for measuring odors, and so I'm going to spend a significant amount of time talking about how that's done, as well as to assess these five application techniques. In odors, there are really three benchmarks: the detection threshold, I smell something, something's different; the recognition threshold, it smells earthy or musty or medicinal; and then the annoyance threshold, I'm getting mad or I'm getting sick. And in terms of the detection threshold, which will be the focus of this discussion, really the way to define that detection threshold is usually by something called the dilution to threshold. That is the point at which the volume of carbon-filtered air over the odorous air when it's first detected. And that is to say, something is different about the odor, about the air that I'm smelling. And just for purposes of this, realize that the higher this DT value, the more offensive or the more intense the odor is. Now, when we're dealing with field situations, there's generally sort of two different techniques. That is, you can actually try to collect the odors from the surface of the soil, either with a flux chamber or a wind tunnel device, or you can actually try to collect the odors, the ambient odors, in the air, and in these Tedlar bags, typically 10-liter Tedlar bags, take them back to the lab and to an olfactometer. And so that's one method. And what I want to talk about today is kind of the comparison of the lab olfactometer to what we talk about as our field olfactometry, and I'll show you that. This is the lab dynamic olfactometer, a really expensive instrument, but it's just a fancy dilution device whereby a person is sniffs different air, different puffs of air, and it's called a triangular force choice. They have these three different samples that they sniff, and they try to detect whether one of them is different or not. But in terms of field olfactometer, basically we have these devices where it measures or it mixes carbon-filtered or clean air with the odorous air, and this is called the nasal ranger, and you could probably fool people that you were, you know, had a radar gun or something with that. But at any rate, that's a device, and the way that it works is there's a wheel on the end that changes this the dilutions to threshold. And the values here are based on an old instrument called a centometer, which was used many years ago, but so the values tend to be the same. Now, the advantage to sort of using one of these nasal rangers is you get this real-time measurement. You avoid sample collection. collecting them in these Tedlar bags and transporting them, potential adulteration. We found out that the Tedlar bags actually have an odor, despite rather extensive efforts to try to remove the odors from the bags. Lower DT levels are possible, relatively low cost. Some of the disadvantages, you have obviously a wind and a source distance, which would be the case maybe for some of the other techniques as well. But visual cues, people tend to smell with their eyes, and personnel logistics, taking a panel out to the field, that's there's a lot of logistics associated with that. The other key is that there's really no standardized method. As opposed to, say, using the lab olfactometer. There's a European method as well as ASTM method where you have to qualify your panelists and how you go through the process. But in terms of the field, there isn't really anything that's been published at this point. The additional motivation is that 13 states are using the field olfactometer and odor regulation, and some are adopting a 7 dilutions to threshold as a definition of an odor violation. And I guess I would maintain, similar to my previous adage, that you really can't fairly regulate what you can't reliably measure. And I think that's a real issue here. In terms of the methods, the 5 application methods that you saw previously applied in these rings, which I'll show you, the nasal ranger assessors were qualified and trained. Four assessors sort of standing shoulder to shoulder, taking 4 readings each over a 10-minute period. And we actually take them out to the field blindfolded. There's a test administrator. They have no idea what the setting is on the nasal ranger at the time. We did it 4 times 0, less than 1 hour, 2 to 4 hours, and then the next morning. And as well as, at the same time, over that 10-minute period, we used this vacuum chamber to collect samples in the Tedlar bags that we took back to the laboratory olfactometer. My colleague Robin Brandt, who really paid the sweat equity for this project, came up with this great idea. Why don't we just put the manure in circles to try to sort of do away with some of the issues associated with the variable wind as well as the source distance. So we take the odor panel out into the center of the circle and then let them do their analysis. Also, you really have to think about staging of these if you're going to compare different methods. They're not all on here, but you basically want to try to avoid cross-contamination. That's a real issue. And to some extent, if you don't know the results before you do the test, you're trying to sort of guessing. So we made some wrong guesses, but the broadcast we did say last of the treatments. So here's a picture of the panel in operation. You can see in the background, you can see where the manure has been spread, and so that's as close as the panelists get to the actual operation. They don't see any kind of equipment, and there's just a close-up of them taking these readings. The test administrator then adjusts the dial. They have no idea what setting it's on at the time, and then over that 10-minute period, then we take a Tedlar bag of odor and take it back to the lab. Tremendous number of factors affecting odor emission. So I have to say the results, whenever you see these kinds of studies, are really context specific. You've already heard a lot about the different kinds of equipment, the different settings. So real quickly, let me show you some of the results. Now here, this is the nasal ranger dilutions to threshold, and we use something called the best estimate threshold. It's just a way of processing the data, very similar to the lab olfactometer. But at least, and these are all the observations at the different times, all the different methods at the different times, and at least we were satisfied that there was something that was sort of consistent with our intuition. That is, you got a tremendous amount of odor right after the application, and then it began to decrease with time. But here, at least for some of the methods, after 24 hours, we're still detecting odor above, say, the background. Now here, this is the composited data for all the different times for the different methods. So there's a lot of information kind of embedded in this figure. But what we see is that the broadcast is greater than the airway, and then the broadcast plus tillage, and then the shallow disc and the direct ground injection, and then the control all the way at the end. Some surprising results. The airway, I guess from looking at the literature, we thought that might do a little bit better, but realize that's where those settings are very important. Here we only used, I think the slits were only like 6 centimeters deep, and the tines were vertical, so there wasn't an offset angle, which increases the size of the slit that's produced. Some other interesting things, the shallow disc and the direct ground, at one time or the other, they were no different than the control. So I'll point that out again. And this is what we did here. We compared, this shows both the field olfactometer as well as the lab data that we took back. And so we have a pretty good correlation then between the lab, which has this sort of standardized method, as well as our field olfactometry. And if you actually regress the values, you get about a 0.7 correlation coefficient. So in conclusion, the nasal ranger olfactometry can be used to statistically differentiate odor levels from different manure application methods. However, multiple assessors, compliance with established protocols, screening of the panel, and careful data collection are essential. And this is really where I think it's important to state from a regulatory standpoint, a couple of assessors going out, taking a couple of readings at a property line are not going to produce statistically valid data, and I don't think it's going to stand up in court either. So finally, the odor emissions, that was the order that I had showed you previously. Just interesting that the, as I mentioned, the direct ground injection and the shallow disc at one time or the other were not different than the control, and the previous discussion, the shallow disc seems to be good from the standpoint of farm profitability, so that may be the way to go. So thanks for your attention. I'll try to address a question or two if there's some time.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Elliott. Again, actually, you've helped to get us back on track. It is time for one question, John. If you...
I was just wondering, can you give some guidance? You know, you're saying like one of those states that has 7 dilution control regulations.